People of America, listen. Should we have national compulsory health insurance? From our national capital, we present the 322nd Wake Up America Quiz Debate, presented under the auspices of the American Economic Foundation, and featuring the Honorable Claude Pepper, United States Senator from Florida, and the Honorable Robert A. Taft, United States Senator from Ohio. Now here's your Wake Up America moderator, Mr. Hamilton Ames. Mr. Ames.
Thank you, Don Gardner. I think we all agree that a nation can be no more prosperous and no happier than the level of its national health permits. The fundamental question is how best to raise this level, how best to make available to the maximum possible extent the remarkable developments of modern medicine. We're fortunate indeed in having Senator Taft and Senator Pepper with us today to discuss the problem. And since Senator Pepper, there are before the Senate two contrasting bills concerning this subject, will you tell us briefly why, in your opinion, the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill is preferable to the bill sponsored by Senator Taft?
Well, Mr. Ames, I think the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill is preferable to the bill proposed by Senator Taft or to any other bill which I've seen, for a number of very obvious reasons. First is the number of people covered under the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill. It's estimated by the Social Security section of the government that 75 to 80% of all the people, that will be in the long run over 100 million of our population, will be covered. Then in the second place, there's no means test provided in the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill. That is, you don't have to qualify under any state law or state administrative regulation as being a needy person and suffer the embarrassment that such a finding always brings about. You will, on the contrary, if you're a covered person, be getting your hospital and medical care in the American way by buying it, by your own contribution to it. For you know that under the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill, it's contemplated that the worker will pay 1.5% of his wages received on payrolls up to $3,600 a year, and his employer will put up the same amount. And if these two contributions do not provide the services that are contemplated, the remainder shall be a federal appropriation. And the next thing is the quality of the service given. The quality of service is very extensive. I won't enumerate all the types of it now, but it's not just hospital and doctor, but it's hospital, specialist care, family physician, a certain amount of dental care, home nursing services, clinical examination, even eye care, and the furnishing of glasses in cases where the physician requires that. And the last thing is that it's thoroughly American in that it allows by the patient free choice of doctor or free choice of hospital, and it likewise makes possible a free choice by the doctor of the patient and the free choice of the person to be served by the hospital. So taking all those things together and many others that no doubt I'll get a chance to mention in the course of the discussion, I think that on the whole, the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill, while not perfect in any sense, nevertheless offers the best care to the most people in the most proper way of any plan that I know of at the present time.
Well, that's very interesting, Senator Pepper. And now, Senator Taft, we've heard from Senator Pepper, and will you tell us briefly why you believe the provisions for national health insurance in your own bill are preferable to those in the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill?
Mr. Ames, the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill is based on complete federal control of all medical services. Ours is based on federal aid, but complete control in the state and local governments to run their own health affairs. In the second place, the Murray-Wagner-Dingell bill is based on compulsory sickness insurance, whereas ours is based on the development of voluntary plans. Under the Murray-Wagner-Dingell bill, every man and woman in the country will have to pay sickness insurance, whether he wishes to or not, in the form of payroll taxes or otherwise, amounting perhaps to 4% of his wages. A huge sum, amounting to from $3 to $5 billion, will pour into Washington. The federal government will then have to set up a vast administrative organization of thousands of personnel, probably many more than there are doctors, to supervise and pay all the doctors in the United States. In effect, every doctor becomes a federal employee. Health service will be nationalized, and a federal bureau will tell everyone what kind of service his insurance covers, when he can have a doctor and when he cannot, how many patients a doctor can have, when and how often The doctor can call it his home and all the details of medical service. This vast system of federally employed physicians will practically supersede our entire medical system. Our bill is based on federal aid to help states fill up the gaps in medical service, already as good as in many, most other countries in the world. It seems to me that local self-government is essential to freedom, and we cannot transfer everything to Washington bureaus. Our plan is based on aid to those unable to pay. We do not undertake to provide government assistance to those who could pay for, can pay for medical service, but we do encourage, by permitting federal money to be used, the setting up of voluntary health insurance plans, which may be joined by those who wish to join them. In summing up, I think I may say that the one plan nationalizes medicine for at least 80% of the people and creates a vast federal bureau. The plan we suggest is an American plan based on free service to those who deserve it, freedom of choice for the individual, and a free medical profession. Only by retaining such freedom can we hope to go forward for the progress in medicine and health in which America has been outstanding.
Senator Pepper, would you like to comment further on your presentation of the case?
Well, except to say that I don't agree with Senator Taft that the estimate is that each individual will have to put up 4% of his wages. The estimate made by Mr. Altmaier, chairman of the Federal the Social Security Board, and the figure that we've generally discussed, is that the worker would pay in taxes later to be levied. 1.5% of his wages, the employer would put up the same amount. And it's estimated that those funds would, within perhaps $500 or $600 million, provide the coverage which is contemplated by this legislation. In the second place, I'd like to say that while undoubtedly there's merit in the proposal by Senator Taft, and if we were not going to have a more comprehensive plan, undoubtedly it would be highly desirable. But the plan proposed by Senator Taft, in the first place, contemplates this means test. And that it's so difficult to determine what is medical need. Who are the medically needed? We know, we remember that during the time we had the WPA, we had a means test, and people were embarrassed by having to meet a means test, and I think we all want to get away from that as soon as we can, and it's so difficult to determine what is the medically needy person that I think it's a whole lot better to let the worker or the person who comes under coverage be able to budget the provision for his medical care by paying so much a week, so much a month out of his wages or salary, and then he'll feel that it's not a charity, but something he needs buying in the American way.
Senator Taft, you were
Mr. Ames, on the cost of this system, the truth is no one knows what it's going to cost. No one has ever tried it. People who set up voluntary health insurance plans and tried to cover sickness insurance have found it infinitely more expensive than they expected. People call in the doctor because they think they're entitled to free service, regardless of whether they need him or not. The New Zealand plan is much more expensive than they anticipated. And the anticipation is 3% tax on payroll plus something contributed by the federal government, which will presumably have to come out of the income tax. So I don't think my estimate of 4% or $3 to $5 billion is at all out of line. On the means test question today, we furnish free medical care to people who are unable to pay for it, and there isn't any trouble about the means test. Cincinnati General Hospital, all general hospitals, furnish people free medical care when they come to those hospitals. We don't furnish free medical care ordinarily in the home because that's difficult to do. But, as a matter of fact, the Murray-Wagner-Dingell bill doesn't provide for how the indigent are going to pay their premiums on insurance. No provision for that. If they want those paid, they've got to take a means test and prove they can't pay for their own insurance. So, really, you don't escape the means test by going into a compulsory federal health insurance plan. Somebody has to pay their fees if they can't pay them themselves.
But, Mr. Ames, I'm sure Senator Taft will recall that the indigent that we think of in the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill are the people in the first place who are not covered by the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill, and that means who are not gainfully employed. And we simply provide in the Wagner-Murray-Dingell bill that the federal government may contribute as the first estimate is, $10 million, for, that is, may have $10 million available for allocation to the state to help them in providing medical care to the indigent. Now, that doesn't mean just the medically indigent, but that means people who are not on payrolls and are not independently able to pay their own contributions. Now, let's take a person that's making $100 a month or $150 a month. Now, that person wouldn't be an indigent person within the terms of the Wagner-Merra-Dingell bill, but that person, and we all know, taking into consideration the cost of modern medical care, is not able to provide that medical care on an income of that character. That's the reason that we want to permit that person, however, to pay a certain percentage of his or her wages or salary into this general fund. And because there's so many people covered, over 100 million people, according to Mr. Altmaier's estimate, because there's so many people covered, each one by paying in a fraction of his wages or salary, up to $3,600 a year, all of us will consider the fund large enough. The estimate is to give all of us the medical coverage that's contemplated in this bill with some grant or appropriation by the federal government. As I say, Mr. Altmaier contemplates about $500 or $600 million contribution by the federal government only three times what Senator Taft contemplates in his bill.
Well, take the man who's able to pay for his medical care. Why shouldn't he pay for his medical care? Under the Murray-Wagner-Dingell bill, the federal government comes in and takes money away from him, taxes him, makes him pay for medical care, which, incidentally, he may not need. If you're going to have health sickness insurance, it seems to me that clearly you should permit the person to decide whether he wants to take out sickness insurance or not. This really isn't sickness insurance. This is a tax imposed on every American citizen, whether he wants it or not, to require him to pay it in. And for that, he's to receive a federally supplied medical service. A medical service which, incidentally, is bound to deteriorate in character. Doctors employed by the government with a certain number of people to look after are not going to take the interest that they do today. And the this tax, our plan proposes that the state may encourage voluntary health insurance plans to have them available to people who want to take out health insurance and spread the risk, so to speak, by providing that the federal money supplied to the states may be used to pay to these voluntary health insurance for all of the indigent, just as the other plan has to take care of the indigent. By paying that large fee for a number of people who would be unable to pay it, they encourage the formation of these insurance plans. Just as in Michigan, we have a voluntary health insurance plan established by the doctors, and the Veterans Administration of the federal government has come in and is paying that fund for all of the veterans to supply medical care for the veterans instead of providing it directly through the federal government. In the same way, our plan will encourage the formation of these voluntary health insurance plans, which ought to be available to everybody in the United States. But they oughtn't to be imposed. Everybody oughtn't to be required to take out compulsory health insurance, whether they wish to or not, and pay it all into a Washington bureau to be paid out again through the provision of fees for doctors.
Mr. James, I think all of us will agree that there's nothing more important for the people of the country than their health and their lives. Now, whatever that's reasonable and proper, which can be done to lengthen their lives and protect their health, is not only meaningful to the individual, but to the nation as a whole. Now, the senator raises a question about, if a person's able to get medical care, why don't they buy it? Well, again, I go back to the question. Is a person making $150 a month, and we know that half the people of this country, half the families of this country, in 1942 were making less than $2,000 a year. For all practical purposes, you can't buy modern medical care that you need for yourself and your family on an income of $2,000 a year. The second thing is, the reason that we advocate this compulsory insurance is to bring the largest number of people into the plan. And we know that by the principle of insurance, the larger the number of people covered by the plan, the cheaper it will be for each one. Now then, I admit that it's compulsion on some, in order that the largest number may benefit by it. But the justification for it is that it's the only way that you can get enough people into a plan that will permit the amount that you'll have to pay to be lowered so as to bring that within the reach of the largest number of people. Now, just two other things mentioned by the senator. One is the deterioration in the quality of the medical service. And he indicated that the doctors would be hired by the government. Now, that's not true under the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill. The doctors are paid fees under this plan just as they are paid fees now. The only difference would be the doctor, if he entered the plan, would have to indicate his willingness to accept the scale of fees which the federal agency would approve and would allow. But there's nothing different in that from what we're doing at the present time.
But the fight is there.
Let me answer these other two things, and then, if I may, just a minute. At the present time, many people are covered by insurance, and the doctors understand when they treat certain patients that they do it for the scale of fees that are approved by the one making the payment of the fees. Now, the other thing is the voluntary plans. Of course, we wish to encourage the voluntary plans. And under the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill, provision is made for allowing participation through voluntary plans. But to again get back to the heart and core of the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill, all the other things in it, the heart and core of it is that by 75 or 80% of the American people being required to be members of it, you are able to furnish first-class, high-standard medical care to more people at a lower cost, and with the preservation of these rights of free choice, which I believe is impossible under any other plan.
However, the federal government is supplying and paying these doctors. They may get the fee, or in the first place, the federal government fixes the fees that they can receive. In the second place, the federal government pays the fee. If you call in a doctor, you have nothing to say about paying him or what he shall get. The federal government is going to have to make regulations. The British Medical Service has a book about an inch thick that has to rest on every doctor's desk to tell him when he can make a call, what kind of sicknesses he can make a call for. He can't go and call on somebody just because they have a cold. The whole thing has to be regulated by a Washington bureau. And the kind of medical service you will get is going to be just like the kind of butter and the kind of meat that the OPA gives you today. It's all run by a Washington bureau that employs the physician, pays the physician, and attempts to provide you with a medical service that you want, instead of your going and employing your own doctor for that purpose, or going to some local concern which you become acquainted with, which you have confidence in, and taking out the voluntary health insurance which will provide the kind of service you want. And if you don't get the kind of service, you can quit. If you don't get the right service from the government, you can't quit. You go on paying your taxes the rest of your life. 4% out of your paycheck every month, 3% at least, in order to enable the government to set up this vast plan, this vast organization necessary to tell all the doctors in the United States when they can serve other people, what kind of service they can give. Even in England, it's prescribed whether you can give certain kinds of medicine that are expensive, whether or not for a certain kind of case you can have an x-ray made or can't have an x-ray made. All those things must be regulated by a federal bureau. And the result is a nationalization of medicine far beyond anything we've ever had in education or any other direct interest of the people outside possibly of the OPA.
Well, Ernest Ames, I cannot agree with my friend that this is a nationalization of medicine. All this bill is, when you come right down to the very heart of it, is for the federal government, by having control over the whole country, to bring into existence a national insurance fund to which practically all the people can contribute and to provide medical benefits in which the majority of the people of this country may have a part. Now, just let me mention here the main types of medical care that would be available under the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill. Medical care, all services needed, surgical care, maternity care, preventive care, hospital care, certain types of dental care, and complete dental care is contemplated when the number of dentists are available. Nursing care, that means home nursing care, which is not available under Senator Taft's plan. Eye care, if it's requested, if glasses are requested by the family or the examining physician. X-rays and clinical examinations, laboratory services, physiotherapy, and medicines. Not the cheap medicines, but the more expensive medicines. Now, you see that under this Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill, by virtue of having 100 million people covered by it, the rate is so low that it's not burdensome to the individual to pay it. And yet the services available are vastly more comprehensive than any services that could be made available under any other plan.
Of course, all these cares are perfectly available today. The question is, who's going to pay for them? Under Senator Pepper's plan, he proposes the government pay for them. But as a matter of fact, nobody knows what they're going to cost. If he provides all these wonderful services, somebody's going to pay for them. They're going to be expensive. They're going to add up this, increase this tax from 4% to 6%. Of course, we can go out and give everybody something for nothing if we want to, but in the net result, they pay for it, and they pay for it in taxes, and they have no choice about whether they want to pay for it or not. Now, I have a lot of insurance I like to take, other insurance I don't like to take, and I think everybody ought to be free to decide when he wants to insure himself against sickness and when he doesn't want to insure himself against sickness. Furthermore, the whole freedom of this country, in my opinion, is based on local self-government, on our cities and our schools running themselves, on the people being interested in running themselves, on developing in each district a medical service and a health service with some federal money to assist them, if you please, which will meet the needs of that particular community. Instead of having somebody sit down here in Washington in a bureau and write what's supposed to be a uniform regulation for the United States, that probably doesn't fit any section in the United States. If we're going to have freedom in this country, we must get the control out of Washington back to the locality.
Well,
and I believe in state aid systems, in health, in all kinds of social welfare, to put the responsibility and the control on the states and local governments and then provide federal money to help them make their systems more complete.
Yet, Mr. Ames, the bill that Senator Taft has authored contemplates that the federal government will approve the various state plans which should be set up in order to get the federal aid that his bill contemplates. That's essentially what is involved in the Wagner-Murray-Dingle bill. While the Surgeon General has certain directive authority, nevertheless, he's aided and counseled by a National Advisory Council of Doctors and the County Medical Society, and the Wagner-Murray-Dingle setup would generally determine the method by which the doctors chose to render the service. That is, whether a fee for each service rendered or a fee for all the patients served, or just what the method would be.
But won't a federal bureau be set up, have to be set up in every city, in every town, at least an employee in every town, to arrange to pay the doctors, to tell the, see whether they're complying with their obligations under the plan, their obligations to the government? You'll have to have, instead of having a locality running it, you'll have in every city a federal bureau, another federal bureau, if you please, running the health affairs of that particular community.
On the contrary, this will be administered by the Federal Security Agency. The Federal Security Agency is already an existing agency of the government. It already has a great deal to do with all the administrative setup that's involved in the whole Social Security system. And I think that largely, and I think that's the testimony from the Social Security Agency, largely the personnel that they already have would be satisfactory as a source of administering these funds. But I want to get back to one thing that Senator Taft mentioned. He spoke of the government paying these doctors. I want to reiterate, the government does not pay these doctors in the sense that out of the federal treasury comes the majority of the money. Most of the money comes the way that other Social Security money comes today, from a tax on payroll paid by the employee and the employer. And I don't call it the government paying for me. When I pay out of my own salary or my own payroll a certain percentage, that goes into this insurance fund. This is insurance. We all contribute to it. And out of the insurance fund is paid the expenses of the administration of this system.
But now, the federal budget shows how this cash all comes into Washington as receipts of the federal government. It is then allocated or appropriated to a fund out of which a federal bureau dispenses the cash to pay the doctors.
Yes.
Which is exactly like any other federal expenditures. And the federal bureau set up is financed the same way, is run by the federal government, and take orders from Washington on every detail of their activity.
Well, now, I'm sure that Senator Taft will distinguish between the government's administration of the fund and the government providing the fund, which is a very vast difference. For example, old age and survivors insurance funds today that are enforced under the Social Security laws of this country. Yes, those monies are raised by taxation imposed by the federal government. They are administered by the federal government, but you surely wouldn't say the federal government puts up the money when it comes out of a worker's payroll it comes from a company that employs a worker.
Here's a man gets $50 a week, and 4% is deducted, we'll say, for health insurance, and that takes $2, and then $2 is deducted from the income tax, to pay his income tax. And it's just the same to him, whether it goes into one or the other. If they tax, it's a compulsory payment of so much cash which goes into the federal treasury. Well, one is a little bit tagged to furnish a specific government activity, but it's all a tax, and a federal bureau supported by that kind of a deduction is just like a federal bureau supported out of general taxation.
Yes, but the senator will have to determine also, or have to recall, who pays the taxes of this country. We again are talking about a system that will make medical care available to the largest number of people in this country. Now, the senator again is using the figure 4%, and I'm going to use 1.5% of the payroll because that's the figure that Mr. Altmaier gave in testifying before the committee. The worker, if he's getting, say, $100 a month, why, then he'd put up 1.5%, or $15 a month. $1.5% would be his contribution to that. And the employer would put up 1.5%, of $100, it'd not be $15, but it'd be $1 or $1.50.
If the employer puts up 1.5%, it increases his cost, it increases the price of the things the workman buys. Payroll tax is paid by the workman, no matter who pays it initially. It comes out in the end of the workman's pocket.
Yes, and if the people of this country lose 600 million man days a year from work on account of illness, it comes out of the public pocket in the long run, too. And so what we are getting at is a system by which the individual worker or the individual citizen can buy the right to adequate health coverage. And the only way that I've heard suggested that will make it possible for over 100 million of our people to get that kind of coverage is for a national insurance fund to which everybody shall make a contribution.
Mr. Ames, our plan contemplates that we develop our present medical system, I think the best in the world today, that we encourage it, we build it up on the basis that it now exists of free doctors, of medical service furnished by the localities in accordance with the needs of the particular locality, and with substantial federal aid given to the states if they will submit a plan that comprehensively gets rid of all of the gaps in medical service today.
But it has a need.
I regret having to cut short your debate, gentlemen, but our time is up. Thank you, Senator Taft, and you, Senator Pepper. On behalf of the American Economic Foundation and more than 100 independent radio stations that carry Wake Up America from coast to coast, next week radio's original quiz debate will bring you another timely discussion of general interest. The topic will be, should we extend the draft? And our speakers, Major George Fielding Elliott, military analyst at CBS and the New York Herald Tribune, and Mr. Norman Thomas, chairman of the Post-War World Council. Now, here's Don Gardner.
You have been listening to the 322nd Wake Up America quiz debate, featuring the Honorable Robert A. Taft, United States Senator from Ohio, and the Honorable Claude Pepper, United States Senator from Florida. Your comments are invited. Listen next week to the topic, Should We Extend the Draft? And the speakers, Major George Fielding Elliott and Mr. Norman Thomas. A reprint of this program may be secured by sending 10 cents in coin or stamp to Wake Up America, 295 Madison Avenue, New York City, 17. Kindly specify program number 322 when placing your order. This is Don Gardner inviting you to be with us next week at the same time. Wake Up America was presented as a public service from Radio Center in Washington.